Yes, now the reins we bore his lords, and not a soul to hear.
SpecficMedia.com presents Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones podcast with hosts E.G. Holyfield, Christiana Ellis, Chooch, Viv, and Nuchus.
Welcome to another episode of SpecFic Media Presents Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones podcast with Christiana Ellis, Chooches, and Nuchus. Today we are missing Viv and PG. They're off saving the world from Snarks and Grumpkins. And that's the best PG I can do.
Well, that was scratchy, but I think I
not was... sexy enough, I know.
Well, I wasn't going to say that.
No one can be PG sexy.
It's missing that Holyfield quality.
Yes, it is.
And I don't mean quality in the sense of, like, quality, but as in quality. You guys know what I mean.
Losing your voice at a con helps.
I have the right tone, but I just don't have the scruffy beard and the sex appeal. I know it.
Gravitas?
So,
yes, gravitas.
So I don't know that we need to say anything about the live show because we're recording this now prior to it being posted, but it will probably be posted before anyone else would be hearing this. So there was a live show. As we mentioned at Balticon 2012, which was awesome. At Balticon and in our live show, we did take questions. And so we can start off this episode by covering a couple of the questions that we didn't have time for in the live show because they kick you out of the room after 50 minutes. So, Chooch, you've got the questions, right?
I do. And question number one is, if you could kill Theon, how would you do it other than just gruesomely?
I don't know. See, for me, again, not everybody agrees with me on this, but I still feel like Theon's whole thing makes me more sad than angry.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like you need to put him down, but maybe drowning, because, you know, why not? That's the Greyjoy thing, right?
That'd be appropriate. Fitting,
but what is dead may never die.
Well, fine. He can be not dead somewhere else.
I mean, and if you want to get, you know, vicious and dirty, you could take him out to, like, to the other continent, to drop him in the middle of the desert, and then he dies nowhere near the sea.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, like, see, it's a fine question. My own personal answer is that I'm not especially concerned with causing a lot of suffering before death. I feel like we need to put him down. It's unforgivable. He's not going to come back from this. But we don't need to make a big production of it, as far as I'm concerned.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I'm thinking to make his shame spiral complete. You don't kill him outright. Send him to the wall.
Mm. Ooh. Theon, I think, would do well on the wall because he'd finally grow up and take some responsibility.
Could be.
Maybe.
Plus, it would suck for him to not be able to shag anyone. Do they have horses?
Well, I am sure that he would be one of the Black Brothers that finds their way to Mole Town every so often.
Sure.
So.
To properly answer this question, I would have to go into spoiler territory, which I won't. So, all I'll say is that Rory would prefer him to be dragon food. Specifically, Rory's dragon food.
Rawr.
Nice.
Rawr.
Question number two. And we're doing a little bit of editorial on the phrasing. Can you even make an inappropriate Game of Thrones joke in the bathroom?
I saw this question in the email and I don't get it. I don't know what it's asking. What about the bathroom?
I mean, I occasionally drop a Grumpkin, but...
Yeah.
Oh, you've never wrote a Grumpkin for me.
But yeah, so like I feel like I don't understand the question. What's the connection to the bathroom? I'm not sure I follow.
Yeah.
Something about bathrooms at the live recording that I don't remember.
Okay. I would say you can always make an inappropriate joke no matter what the setting.
Yeah, when it comes to Game of Thrones, A Song of Ice and Fire, I mean, inappropriate jokes are just built right in. We've got twincest. We've got, you know, everything that could possibly go wrong will go wrong and cross that line. So really,
sure.
Yeah, bad jokes abound. Come on, bring them.
You can pretend you're Tyrion pissing off the wall at the end of the Ooh. World.
Totally.
Well, I can.
Yeah, you can. Well, you don't know how talented I am.
Yeah, so I can't help but feel that question must have some inside joke quality to it that I was not actually participating in, so I'm not sure what's going on there.
Do we have any other last things to say about last week's episode that we didn't get in to the live recording?
Well, we kind of had to rush through the second half of the episode, but I don't know that there was anything specific that I really felt we missed.
Yeah, and I can't remember exactly where we left off, so I'm going to call it good.
Yeah, I'm just so blown away by this episode that last week's episode is, yeah, it was good. Okay, can we talk about
it? Exactly. It's like, I don't know that we need to spend any more time on episode 8. It was fine, but episode 9 is out now, so let's talk about that one.
And this is like the climax of the season.
It is.
Yeah, it's the great big battle. It's the one scripted by George R.R. Martin, author of the books, in case anyone doesn't know that.
He wrote Stick 'Em with the Pointy End last season, which was a huge fan favorite.
Yes, and so one of the other things that we heard about the production way early on was that they spent something like half their total season budget just on this episode.
Wow.
Oh, cool.
Well, and I believe it, too, just given the scope of it is so much bigger than what we're used to seeing. Now, you know, that said, obviously, I don't think it doesn't quite compare in scope to, a major Hollywood film, but considering it's made for something like 10% of what that major Hollywood film might have been made for, that's pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can say that I was blown away, and you can tell that George wrote this because there's not one scene that I have a big problem with. It's the best episode probably ever, and I did cry at the end, but not like I did for Lady or Ned.
I think the one of the nice things about it is the decision to not cut away to any of the characters who are not at the site of this battle.
Yeah.
So no cutting up to Jon, beyond the wall, no cutting over to Daenerys across the sea, no Catelyn, no Rob, no Brienne, no Jaime. This time is all about Battle of the Blackwater. And so there was plenty of cutting around they could do even within that. But I thought it was the right move to really give the battle the space it needed.
Mm-hmm. I 100% agree.
Yeah, there's so much going on. Mm-hmm. My overall was all I wrote was epic. Viv's overall, she wrote, I hated how much I loved it. Too much pain and death for me. It was an absolutely excruciating hour.
I just thought it was fantastic. It was, you know, there were couple of shots where there's a piece of me that wants to nitpick about like, well, it could have looked bigger, but I have to just remind myself that it's like, listen, given the budget that they have, it looked pretty damn good. And so I need to stomp down the part of my brain that occasionally looks at 30 guys against a wall and says, that's not much of a battle, but
or 7 seconds of fighting and say, wow, that was pretty vast.
Yeah. So I really don't want to criticize the episode because I think given what it is, it's amazingly good. And I guess it's just one of those things where they couldn't have possibly made it as quite as epic as it is in the book. And that's not the fault of the show. That's not a failing of the show. It's just a fact of what it costs to produce that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And so given those realities, I thought they did an incredible job, and I loved everything about it. And like I said, it was really, there's the nitpicky part of me on some of the shots in the battle, but that was like the worst possible thing I could say about it, is that I have nitpicks that I think I should ignore.
Well, with that said, should we pick it apart?
Yeah. So I think
forks.
I think what we talked about a little bit before we started recording was that because this episode, you know, it's a smaller number of characters. We're not going all over Westeros, but we're still doing a lot of cutting back and forth, including some scenes where it's like, oh, let's see what Stannis and Davos are doing for about 20 seconds and then cut back over to something else. So rather than try to go through just in sequence, we thought we would rather follow the various threads throughout. So, you know, we start the episode with Davos and Mathos and his son Mathos and Stannis' fleet. So we can kind of follow through what's going on with them, and then we'll circle back and follow, you know, another one of the threads. Mm-hmm. Rather than just trying to do everything in only chronological order. So, that said, we start with Davos and Mathos in Stannis' fleet. And we have that opening episode, which I thought did really well at feeling like stuff they would really be talking about, but also sort of reminding us as the audience, like, okay, where do things actually stand here? Okay, who's got the bigger army? Who's got more ships? What's going on here? Mm-hmm. Where, yep. You know, and so I thought it did really well at just sort of reestablishing us, you know, saying this is where we are. This is what's about to happen. Mm-hmm. And it had some nice, great little details in it, like spending several shots on just Stannis' soldiers down below in the hold. This reminder that, you know, he's got all these soldiers, but most of them just kind of have to sit in the bottom of the boat. And I was wondering, it's like, okay, whose job is it to empty the puke bucket?
Oh,
well, they're nasty. Failing because it was pretty full.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. My only nitpick there is that I have a problem thinking that the soldiers in the bowels of the ship were going to ride in full armor. But then I reminded myself, that's how you know they're knights. Because they're wearing armor.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that they might, when they were a week out, they might not have been in armor all the time, but they're just about to storm the gates. Yeah. So they put their armor on, I think.
That's what I figured. This is the home stretch. This is go time.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they're in the dropship.
Right. So in the conversations with Davos and his son, you know, leading up to the battle, I thought we also got some nice reminders of just the conflict between the various religions, like, you know, his son correcting him when he says, you know, God's help us or whatever. Mm-hmm. Just again, his son just really is a true believer, not only in the Red God, but also in Stannis. And, you know, so, you know, Davos is talking about, used to be a smuggler, and now I'm sailing right into the royal fleet. And Mathos is like, this is the royal fleet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked that part of the conversation. There's only one God, blah, that. For me, it's old now, how many times they have the argument, but I realize, you know, they personally probably have the argument all the time. Mm-hmm. Because his son is such a true believer and probably believes he can still, you know, convert dad over before it's too late.
Well, and, you know, honestly, I have to say it's because obviously in any family, because those sorts of conversations happen in real life all the time, of course. But I thought the son is pretty respectful of his dad, even as he's trying to convince his dad that, mm-hmm. you know, the Red God is the way to go. But he's respectful, too. You know, he doesn't, he's basically just saying, anytime you say something that goes against it, I'm going to remind you what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still that whole bit about, you know, I believe in our cause. I believe in Stannis. I believe in our captain. And yeah. that was just kind of a nice moment. It's like, aw.
I just went, duh.
Yeah.
So it is a little suspicious, though. I mean, so like they're coming up and then they, so from their perspective, you know, they're coming up on King's Landing and they hear the bells starting and they're like, oh yeah, well, we got musical instruments too. Let's jam.
Mm-hmm.
I love the drums.
Yeah.
The drums were awesome.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. And so it was interesting that we really weren't getting any conversation at all from Stannis at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, well, first of all, I think we didn't need it, but I almost, I think that it's like Stannis probably right now doesn't want to talk to anybody. He's kind of getting his whole bloodlust, righteous fury thing going. So it's like, he doesn't want to talk to people, I would think. He wants to get in there and start taking heads.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So the drums and, but they're coming up and it's so weird because they keep expecting the Lannister fleet to come up to meet them and it keeps not. So Matthos is starting to think, well, maybe they've mutinied. Maybe we caught them by surprise. But Davos is kind of like, dude, Lord Varys knew what you had for breakfast 3 days ago. There's no surprises here.
Right. But as far as them possibly mutinying and taking off, he's like, maybe.
Well, and but I mean, the basic fact is, it's like, it's weird. So something's going on. Mm-hmm. And I think at this point, Davos is already starting to feel really suspicious, but you know, at this point, you know, what are you going to do? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Davos knows he just doesn't know what it is.
Well, and we also need to remind ourselves too, Davos is not used to this sort of position. He's used to being the one guy in the little ship that's trying not to get seen by anybody.
Mm-hmm. He's used to being the trick.
Yeah. So this idea of him just being the high captain sailing a fleet into a city, I think even if he is starting to be suspicious that there's some sort of a trap, he wouldn't necessarily know what to do about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and also, of course, you know, they had no way of knowing what Tyrion had actually planned for them. So they see the one ship come out. That's weird. There doesn't seem to be anybody on it. And just one note, too, is... there's a couple of times where various archers are told to hold, and Tyrion doesn't make his archers hold with the bows drawn, whereas Davos does.
I was thinking, I was like, no archer can hold a knock for that long.
That's really hard to do.
Ow.
Yeah. Of course, you know, he's probably didn't expect to have them hold it that long, but he only was just waiting to see someone and no one was there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But so in the immortal words of Admiral Ackbar, it's a trap.
It's a trap.
And so I have to say the wildfire explosion is probably one of the more memorable things I feel like I've ever seen on TV.
Mm-hmm.
I think the wildfire explosion made Michael Bay cream his pants.
Yeah.
It was like the best explosion ever.
Yeah. It was pretty great. And one of the things that was nice is that it was kind of able to be a little bit of a surprise even for those of us who have read the books, because the trap, although still involving wildfire, obviously plays out fairly differently in the books. Or I guess it's not that different, but in the books, one of the things we had actually commented on earlier in the season was like, where's Tyrion's chain? What's going on? Because in the books, we had heard several references up to this point of Tyrion having commissioned this really, really huge, powerful, long chain. And we didn't know what it was for. And in the books, what happens at this point is that once Stannis' fleet has come into the bay, he has winch towers on both sides of like the entrance, the mouth of the bay. Mm-hmm. And they have this chain strung between them. And so they cinch it up so that it's like this really strong chain about 12 feet, you know, or something like that above the surface. And so at that point, that means once the flame has started, the ships can't get out. They can't get away. The retreat. Yeah. And what that creates too, is, this basically the ships end up just all dammed up against the chain, like, you know, like yeah. the, like a beaver dam. And there's literally battles of people jumping from one boat to another as they're all burning and all stuck up against this chain.
Yeah. Wow.
It's pretty awesome in the book. And so that's what I'm talking about in terms of just some of the stuff that's from the book they just really couldn't have done, I don't think. It would just have been too crazy expensive.
I was looking for the chain, but honestly, I'm okay with them not having it, you know?
I agree. And honestly, this works too. This feels also like, first of all, part of having Tyrion have this chain and we don't know what it's for takes a little bit of the tension away from the upcoming battle, I think, in the book, because we kind of have this feeling of Tyrion's got a plan.
Yeah.
Even if we don't know what it is. Whereas in the series, the way it works, because we don't have this chain and we really feel like with Tyrion that, like, well up to, you know, this episode, we're not 100% sure he's got a plan.
Right.
You know, we've heard there's wildfire, but we've also heard how crazy dangerous that could be if it's used in the way everyone is expecting to use it. So we don't know what the plan is exactly. And so I thought this really worked as well.
Wildfire launched differently in the series as opposed to the book?
I think it was, they had like a portion of the Lannister fleet in the bay as bait.
Yeah.
And they were loaded up with the wildfire. And so I don't remember how they ignited it, but it was on the ships. When they did the trap in the book. Mm-hmm. But so it was mostly much the same in that sense.
And the sense of Tyrion not having a plan, you know, was reinforced last episode when we had the, you know, Bronn being bored and why am I here?
Well, and we have Tyrion just still kind of like, he's freaked out. Like, he's not feeling good about this.
Yeah.
But once it's already too late, Davos does see and recognize the wildfire. But it's too late to do anything about it. I mean, he yells to everyone to steer away, but there's no time.
It's too late. Mm-hmm.
And so it kaboom. And so it seems pretty clear that Mathos is not okay.
Yeah.
Davos. Chooch, what do you think about everyone's fate after this?
You see lots of people obviously burning to death and all that. So not so good for most of the fleet. I think Mathos, he took direct blast. I'm thinking he's a little pieces in the bottom of the bay. Davos he got knocked off the ship, but it didn't seem like it was necessarily fatal. So I'm thinking he may pop up somewhere like a cork.
And then the only other person of note would be Stannis, and we see him fighting later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's clear that he's near enough to be startled by the gigantic green explosion, but not damaged. So the wildfire proves enormously effective, but and it takes out, I don't know if they say at some point, but I'd say it's probably a good estimate about half the fleet.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately for, you know, Tyrion and the Lannisters, Stannis does have a lot of ships. So even just half is still a lot.
And he has his little trick. He can only use it once.
Yes, exactly. And so we have, you know, Stannis's first lines of the episode is basically saying, okay, well, we can't get in as close as we wanted, so we're just going to land where we're at and run up. And his guy is saying, but there's a reason that we weren't going to do that before. It's because now we have to have people running a long way into a storm of arrows.
And rocks.
Hundreds will die. And Stannis is like, nope.
Thousands. That was such a good line.
Yeah.
PG, drop that here.
But what's interesting about Stannis, just as such a contrast to what we see Joffrey do, is as much as he's just telling his guy, nope, thousands are going to die, he is leading the charge. Mm-hmm. He's in the first boat, and then as we see later when they get the ladders up, he is the first guy up the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And so what do we think's going on with him? Because that's not, you know, I think even in this culture, that's a little extreme.
I think that's how Robert fought. Honestly, they talk about the way that Robert fought with his Warhammer and he was always in the front. And honestly, I think that's how Robert fought. And that's a bit of the Baratheon in him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Robert had a bit of the statesman, a bit of the warrior. And Stannis got the warrior side and Renly got the statesman side. Stannis sucks at being a statesman, but he clearly we can see he's a good warrior. Whereas Renly, he's more of a lover than a fighter, but he's a great statesman.
Right. Like Renly had made a big production about what his Kingsguard was, you know, and he had like a whole bunch of them. Whereas Stannis doesn't seem to have any Kingsguard at all.
Mm-hmm.
He's the first guy up the ladder. And so I think also maybe part of it is that even if he started it kind of cynically with Melisandre, I think he may have started to drink his own Kool-Aid a little bit.
Yeah.
He believes that the throne is rightfully his and maybe there's even destiny involved. And so, of course, he's going to be the first one in because he's not going to die. He's going to take the Iron Throne.
He is Azura's eye.
Yeah.
That's what he believes.
And he's pretty badass about it. I mean, you know, first guy up the ladder, he's taking out a whole bunch of guys. I think, yeah. And so basically we, here's a question for you, Chooch, you know, especially as we're just talking about getting into the battle here and sort of following Stannis now. Who are you rooting for in this episode?
It's a really tough one. I was rooting for Tyrion. Mm-hmm. It's not that I want the Lannisters to keep the throne or to win, but I do want Tyrion to win.
Yeah. I think that's how I felt too.
And I certainly don't want, you know, the Melisandre to have any sort of power.
Mm-hmm. That's, well, you know, like as we get the scene with Varys, in this episode, it seems clear that, you know, it's not always clear what Varys wants as his end game, but he seems pretty clear that having Stannis on the throne is definitely not it.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be bad for everybody.
Mm-hmm. So, I think that's kind of where Stannis is coming from, is that, you know, it's like you said, Nutty, with the, you know, he's got that Baratheon fighting spirit, but also he believes that, you know, he is this Lightbringer reborn Azor Ahai, and, you know, he has the rightful claim to the throne. He's going to take it. It's like just the idea that he might get killed in the battle just like doesn't even really cross his mind, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so literally we see that even when, you know, the battle is essentially lost, his own men have to literally drag him away as he's screaming at them not to run.
Right.
So
now,
do you want to Oh, unless you have another thought on that. I was wondering if you want to jump back to everybody else's preparation, since that's such, like, the pivotal scene.
Yeah, oh, okay. I want to go back to that. We'll come back to the battle being
and then
won.
Do the first charge.
I have something big to say later mm-hmm. for okay. that.
All right. Well, so let's jump back then. So let's our second scene was Tyrion in bed with Shay, mm-hmm. and he can't sleep. He's afraid. He's not afraid to say so. And it's a really interesting scene that I've been hot and cold on Shay all along, of course, and I've said so, but mm-hmm. I liked her in this scene, especially where he's basically telling her, you know, listen, I would understand if you felt like you needed to leave so that you wouldn't be killed by the Baratheons when they take the city.
Mm-hmm.
It's not your war. And she says, oh, yeah? Well, it is now.
Yeah. Yes. I like how she thinks she can protect him. She mm-hmm. won't let Stannis burn him and all of these other things. Everyone knows my hatred for Shay and all of my problems. But in the last couple of episodes, I've been won over. And honestly, this new direction for Shay being protective of Tyrion and of Sansa, has won me over. So all of my belly aching can go away now because it's paid off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we also get the nice exchange of, he says,
you can't fuck your way out of everything.
I have so far.
You can't fuck your way out of everything. And she says, it's worked so far.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, when they first met, you want me to make love to you like the last night you'll live. And
yeah.
Here we are again.
Yep, indeed.
Super sweet.
So I guess if we want to check in with everybody as they prepare, we have Cersei procuring some essence of nightshade from Maester Pycelle. Whose beard seems to be coming back in pretty well.
Yeah. Clearly not interested in talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
No, she's not. Now, Chooch, when she procured the essence of nightshade, what did you think it was for?
My initial thought was that it's a suicide pill in case the worst happens. But then we have, you know, them held up in the Red Keep. And when she first asked Sansa to come drink wine, then I'm like, why is she going to kill Sansa? I just immediately jumped. Oh, clearly she's going to poison her. But I had no idea why.
Yeah.
I thought that was a nice red herring.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I thought Cersei was amazing in this whole episode. We see a couple of layers just even over the course of that short scene where there's a couple of things going on with her. We already see that she's starting to get drunk, but we can also see that this is not just like drunk for fun. She is getting drunk on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But we also see, like, as he's trying to give her a long lecture, there's part of her that's just really irritated and wants him to just shut up because he's annoying
mm-hmm.
and wants him to go away. But you can also see, like, especially once he gives her the bottle, she's like still wanting him to go away, but at that point it's less a matter of you're annoying, but it's more a matter of just like this, what I'm doing right now is messing me up. She's really conflicted about it.
Well, and having seen the whole episode, knowing what that actually was for,
mm-hmm.
good God, I don't know. I don't think I could have held it together.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't for her.
Yeah, this whole episode, she was absolutely just exquisite.
Yeah.
The quips, her mouth movements, the way she got more snockered and got darker and darker. And,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, likely, you know, steeling herself for what's going to come.
Yeah.
Lena Headey brought it.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
So I think our next scene is a scene in which Bronn sings and the Hound does not.
Oh, the Reign of Castamere. I had wanted to know how that sounded for so long. I'm so happy it's there. I'm still waiting for the Bear and the Maiden Fair, but that was great.
So just for Chooch and anyone who hasn't read the books, the Reigns of Castamere, the song that they sing there and then we have over the end credits again, is just, it's one of the songs that just shows up over and over in the series. It's, you know, like in The Lord of the Rings, the books have a fair number of songs where people are just singing and they'll have lyrics or whatever. And The Reigns of Castamere is one that comes up often. And so just actually getting to hear a piece of it in the episode was cool, especially since it is obviously so tied to what's happening, because without the context that the books provide, you know, in the show, you wouldn't necessarily know what it's really referring to. But just the backstory of the song. So the story told by the song is we've got a proud lord said, you know, so who are you? The proud lord said that I must bow so low. And basically what's going on there is we have the Lannisters coming up to take a castle and the lord of that castle saying, I don't have to submit to you. Who are you that I must bow so low? And basically trying to say, you know, my claws are just as long and sharp as yours. I don't have to worry about you. But now, you know, and so he spoke. But now the rains weep over his halls with no one there to hear. And so basically it's talking about a real siege where Tywin sieged Castamere, and basically the guy wouldn't submit and Tywin obliterated him. And so that's what the song is about. And so the Reigns of Castamere is a double meaning because it's talking about rain like weather, but also the family name was Rain, spelled R-E-Y-N-E. So the Reigns of Castamere is kind of a double meaning there. But the song is basically, it's the Lannister song. It's a song about how even people who think they don't need to worry about the Lannisters, they learn that they're mistaken.
And we actually hear the song three times.
Do we?
At least parts of it. So they're singing it in the tavern. And it gets played during the credits. But it was really subtle. But towards the end, when Tyrion's, you know,
I'm gonna
take it, and he gives this little speech. Yeah, the refrain comes up, which I thought was really cool.
Ooh, good catch!
Yeah,
nice. Layers.
But anyway, this scene with Bronn and the Hound was great too, just because it's another perfect example of what the show does sometimes, that it gives us a scene between two characters that in the book, we have no idea if they even ever had a conversation at all. You know, they're two interesting characters that we know about, but I think in the book, we just don't ever get a scene where it's just the two of them because neither of them are POV characters. And so it was interesting, just their two different approaches, because they are certainly both killers, right? As the Hound points out. But, you know, Bronn's inclination is to prepare for that with ale and women and song. But the Hound is kind of really contemptuous of that whole idea of saying, you know, you and I both really want the killing part. And so you're messing around with this. And he seemed really aggressive. And I think part of that was maybe, well, so here's the question. Why do you think the Hound was so determined to essentially pick a fight with one of the best other soldiers in there before the war has even started? Because it looked like he was basically stomping in there, going to basically threaten him to a duel on the spot.
Yeah.
I think he was itching for a kill.
I really didn't get that at all, why he would be throwing down when they clearly have business outside the walls soon. And it's been a few episodes now, like, you know, I remember commenting, wow, he's never said so much before. And everything is, you know, he's a killer, you're a killer, I'm a killer, they're a killer like me. And it's like, you're really kind of obsessed, dude.
Yeah.
But it's clearly he's unraveling.
Mm-hmm. I think it's exactly both of those things, is that, you know, we're seeing a slow build over the course of the whole season with the Hound. Him really losing any sense of what he's supposed to be doing or what he even wants to do. And just he's increasingly feeling like, is this my life now? Is this just going to be it? Just like this? Because I don't like this.
Yeah. And as we're talking, I'm starting to think the Hound is slipping more into his brother's role, as he was just Joffrey's protector. Mm-hmm. And now he's of the King's Guard. He is a Lannister man. He has all this duty and honor and things that he always refused. I mean, he's still not a knight, but at the same time, what's making him any different than his brother? And then he looks at Bronn, who was a sellsword, who's now captain of the city watch. And I don't know, it fills him with hate that they're both pawns. And, and like you said, is this my life? And he can't hit Joffrey over it. So he'll pick a fight with Bronn.
Yeah. And I wonder if there's a little bit of a parallel just in the animosity between those two and then, say, Cersei and Sansa. This sense of, like, you and I are in similar roles, and yet I feel like we're very different people, and I'm just pissed off at how messed up the world is that stuff happens like this.
That's a good thought. I had one question about this scene. Who goes for a drink with the Hound?
I wondered who that guy was, too. Who's that guy that shows up with him? I didn't know. Any listeners who know who the guy who shows up in the tavern with the Hound is, fill us in, because I was curious about that, too.
I'm like, who decides? You know what? Battle's about to start. Let me go for a drink with the Hound. That's a good idea.
Although it could just be the Hound walking by and saying, you, come drink with me.
That's true.
I wondered if it was maybe another one of the Kingsguard that was also off duty with him at the moment.
Could be.
But again, I was curious. Likewise.
And the scene left me with a question, which is, how many times has Bronn broken his nose?
I know. I want the rest of the story.
What I was going to say about that is that it was the first exposition scene where the presence of nudity actually gets him to stop talking.
Yes.
He's kind of like, and the third time, and then she unrobes, and he's kind of like, eh, you don't really care about the third time.
Yeah.
No. Don't feel sorry for him. He'll be halfway up your ass before the night's through.
That was good. That was really well done. I love Bronn in the books, but I feel like we get so much more of him in the series, and I just love that. I did want to mention, he does say, once again, I don't think he likes me, which he said in the first episode in reference to that.
I think what happened in the first episode was Tyrion told Bronn that the Hound didn't like him. This one doesn't like me. And I can't imagine what Bronn says. Yeah.
That's what it is. You're right.
But it's a callback to that, I think.
Yes, it is.
Luna is whining at my feet. I don't know if you guys can hear that.
She thinks you're talking about her.
No, I think she wants to rock time, and I'm taking too long.
I did want to point out that Bronn carries a kukri.
A what?
A kukri, the sword that he had behind himself. It's a curved dagger.
Oh.
If you play MMOs. Yes, it's called a kukri. We actually have one on the shelf right next to me. It's a curved blade. It's really awesome, and often you will see people double wielding them. They're often used in MMOs, but they're freaking awesome blades, you know, because you can slash at things that are in your way, you can cut, and you can fight people. It's a multi-tool of killing. So nice. I was very happy to see that. Sorry, I laid the hardcore geek on.
We welcome that here.
My bad.
You keep trying to move on the scene, but we talked at the live recording. Who could take Jamie? We never mentioned the Hound, did we?
That's true. We didn't. I wonder about the Hound because he doesn't usually do the tournament thing either, does he?
No, he does. Well, yes, he did. He fought his brother, didn't he?
Oh, well.
well, he did, but that was he wasn't show, in that battle in the
oh,
show.
Right. Yeah, it was, he interrupted.
Yeah, because his brother was basically flipping out and.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I don't remember.
But I think the reason I didn't think of him is I would never imagine him going against Jaime, going against a Lannister and fight because he's so loyal. But I just thought it was a good one to bring up. We may move. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Poor Luna's like got her legs crossed.
No, she's okay. She's just impatient. Mm-hmm. Impatient little dog. So we move on to the bells ring for horror. And get a nice exchange with Varys and Tyrion. You know, they ring for, you know, deaths and wars. And Tyrion goes, and weddings. And Varys says, exactly.
Very nice.
One nice little subtle detail is Tyrion in his armor has the chain of office, which is described in the books, which is basically, it's just sort of a necklace chain that looks like a whole bunch of little hands interlinked, you know, the hand of the king thing. So
I
in the book,
so his chain, hard.
Yeah. In the book, it's described that, you know, like in the first season, there was that little, like that pin that Ned had to wear. That was, you know, signified being the hand of the king. That wasn't how it was in the books. In the books, it was this chain of office. And so that wasn't something we had seen before, but it was on his armor when he was suiting up.
Nice.
Nice little detail there. We've got Podrick.
Podrick, is that it?
Is that it? Nice touch. As if you don't know the name of every boy in town.
I'm not entirely sure what you're suggesting.
I'm entirely sure you're entirely sure what I'm suggesting.
Actually showing up, like, you know, so we can see his face and everything this time.
God.
Yes, and Tyrion trusts him. And I can, I think I understand why, is he doesn't talk very much.
And I did like that when he says, oddly, I do, and Podrick kind of smiled.
Yeah. Now, Chooch, do you know Podrick's last name?
People have said it on this podcast, even.
Okay. His last name is Payne.
That's right. I was going to say that.
And the fact that Tyrion trusts him is very big because he's Sir Ilyn's cousin, brother? Something.
I don't think it's a direct relation. I mean, it might be like cousins or something, but it's not like immediate family.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
But Pod is awesome.
Yes,
doesn't
he
have as much acne as described, but he's very awesome.
The one thing that bugged me in this scene is Varys saying, "I don't believe I ever told you how I was cut.
Yeah,
someday I will." What's the point of saying that?
There's a couple of teases like that, you know, like later where Cersei's saying, "Shay, tell us a story." When I was 13, and then Lancel bursts in.
Well, that was scary. I was like, oh, God. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Yeah.
In the book, he tells Tyrion the story.
Mm-hmm.
He does tell him how he was cut.
We might still get that.
Yeah, we might get that. But basically, he explains why he doesn't like dark magic.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't think is a spoiler.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. He made that.
Well, he certainly made it clear connection. That he doesn't like, that he definitely believes in it and doesn't like it.
Yeah, I felt there was likely a connection there, but.
Yeah. I really believed in this scene that Varys is on Tyrion's side.
Mm-hmm. At least for the moment.
Yes, at least for the moment.
He feels that's what's best for the kingdom.
The realm.
So next we got a nice scene where basically it was in rapid succession a whole lot of little pairings, you know. So we get Tyrion and Bronn, Tyrion and Sansa, Sansa and Joffrey, Tyrion and Shay, Shay and Sansa.
Mm-hmm.
All in pretty rapid succession, but there was some great stuff in that little scene. And we get Tyrion calling Bronn his friend for the first time, and is like, just because I pay you for your services doesn't diminish our friendship. And Bronn's like, enhances it, really.
That's a big word for a sellsword.
Or fancy, I think he did.
Or right.
Been hanging out with fancy folks.
I do like the discussion of, do you know how to use that? And he's like, well, I've chopped wood with it. No, I watched my brother Jamie.
And I love how he says it at first, and then he sort of realizes it wasn't like a deliberate lie or a joke. It was really like, oh, I've chopped wood. Oh, wait, no. I watched my brother chop wood.
Which I thought was great. In the books, in the first book, he actually does fight with the hill folk and is quite good with the axe.
Well, and so there was also a little bit of a callback to when he killed the guy with the shield.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I like that. You killed a man with a shield, he'll be wicked with that.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever. Yes.
So then Tyrion moves on to Sansa, and after just some logistical setup of why she's there, we get that heartbreaking moment of, she says, I'll pray for your safe return. Yeah. And he's kind of like, really? He's like, oh yes, just like I'll pray for the kings. And he's like, oh
yeah. I was like, ow.
She wants my body to return, but not me.
Yeah. Poor Tyrion. Can't get no respect.
Yeah.
No.
Again, you know, I'm trying to help you people.
Yep. I like how he messed up Shay's name.
Yeah.
I know, like, on purpose. And you can just see on her face, she's kind of pissed off. It's like, dude, really?
But there's also a bit of double talk there, where he's talking to Sansa, but he's really talking to Shay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was nice.
Mm-hmm. So then we get Sansa and Joffrey. And boy, she is just not pulling any punches now. She's getting as close as you could possibly get to just explicit out-and-out calling him a douche.
Yeah, that was excellent subversion. Of course I'm an idiot. Of course you'll be in the vanguard.
Right, yes.
Kiss my brother, always bitch. Goes to you're a wuss.
Thickest, and he's just a pretender. Yes. I know, that was great.
I love that whole thing.
Worth a shot. But as we see, by the end of that scene, she's not optimistic that he'll be killed, because the worst ones always live.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So then everybody to battle stations. we get everyone up on the wall, and Lancel in his armor. And then Joffrey and Lancel want to know, dude, where's the fleet? Weren't they supposed to be like helping us not die? And Tyrion's he goes all cryptic. Oh yeah, they're off somewhere, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I loved the telephone game.
Hound, tell the hand that his king has asked him a question.
The king has asked you a question.
Sir Lancel, tell the hound to tell the king that the hand is extremely busy.
The hand of the king would like me to tell you to tell the king.
I tell the hound to cut you in half, you'll do without a second thought.
That would make me the quarterman. Just doesn't have the same ring to it.
Mm-hmm. That was good.
I know, but you can see how Lancel is in this position of being annoyed every time and yet completely understanding, yes, I have to do it.
And yes. Of course, is that what the being cut in half?
Yeah, but Joffrey has no patience. Yeah, Quarterman just doesn't have the same ring to it. And Tyrion just basically makes it clear, saying, listen, Joffrey, I know what I'm doing here. You don't. I'm going to try to save your life only to the end that my life and your life are linked in this context. So shut up. Let me do my work. I'll keep you alive if I can.
And it really seems like, Joffrey's kind of amped up. All right, here we go,
Yeah.
It's the battle. And when Tyrion says, your pinched little head's going to be on a spike, it almost seemed like that was the first time it had never occurred to him before.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean I could die?
Yeah, I think he was still pretty gung-ho, though, up until after the wildfire.
Yeah.
Because you see, when that explosion went off, he was still grinning ear to ear, him and the pyromancer.
Yeah, he had wood. The pyromancer, I mean.
Well,
the pyromancer was so happy.
I loved, first of all, just how visually interesting giving the signal and then Bronn's shot to ignite the wildfire was. Great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yay, Bronn got the shot.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing, too, that I really liked that they didn't necessarily have to do is all of the reaction shots to the wildfire explosion of, like, hooray, it worked, but oh my God, that's really horrible.
Yeah.
That is like, you know, it's like that classic line about, you know, the first nuclear bomb test is like, we have become death, destroyer of worlds. It's sort of like, okay, so that accomplished what we were hoping for it to do, but holy crap, that's really scary.
Yeah. And yeah. That's how I referred to it in my notes as the wildfire nuke.
Nice.
Yeah, so I really liked that the show took some time to give us some reaction shots from everybody. You know, Bronn, mm-hmm. Joffrey, the Pyromancer, Tyrion, just everyone just kind of going, yeah, the Hound. Well, especially the Hound because, yeah. You know, that kind of starts to set up what's going to happen with him later. And
the
just
people on the ship had a reaction.
Yeah, yeah. They did. So it's mostly,
I'm on fire.
Yeah. Well, and the scary thing about wildfire, too, is that it does not immediately extinguish just because you jump in the water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Before they launched it, we did get all the girls in the Red Keep, the hens. And I just had to crack up when Cersei came in with the metal corset. The armored corset. It's like,
it was
God.
So silly looking. I'm sorry. Like... Yeah. It made it, I don't know, it looked like something somebody without breasts would wear to mock that they have breasts with the little cups that I'm sorry.
I honestly didn't even notice.
Really? Because it didn't go with, like, her loose-fitting shift underneath.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, so we get this early scene where basically at this point we can see that Cersei is really unraveling here. She's not optimistic about how this is all going to go down. And you can see it's like she doesn't want to talk to Sansa. She just can't help herself.
Mm-hmm.
It's like picking a scab. You can't stop yourself doing it. That's what I get from Cersei in this, is that she's just sort of feeling like, you know, I can see you stuck in the same position that's made me so miserable, but look at you. Instead of trying to do something about it, you're just, you're praying, and, you pretend to love everybody, and you're just like, you're just so perfect, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw it as just misery loves company.
Mm-hmm.
And as she got, as I was saying earlier, she got drunker and gets darker, and it's just like really kind of wants to see Sansa, I guess, mm-hmm. suffer.
Yeah. Well, and we also get set up the first explanation for why Pain is there is like to protect us,
mm-hmm.
but also sends him off to deal with some traitors. We get some classic Cersei wisdom. You have to make certain that they fear you more than they do the enemy.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that protects us because they're a threat to the realm. Mm-hmm. Oh, and when they, I think it's the second scene in the Red Keep, you see Ser Dantos on fool duty.
Yeah, that was a nice, nice. Little, like, reminder. Yeah, look, here's a guy that we saw earlier in the season and now callback.
Yeah. So
he's still here. Yeah. And he's doing pretty good, you know, given that he was actually a knight before and now he has to be a fool. And he's like, okay, well, might as well learn juggling. Going to try to get it done, right? You know?
Yes.
Life gives you lemons, you juggle them. And then Cersei just gets into some prime monologuing in all of those sequences of just like, I'm going to lecture you about, women have more tools than just crying, you know. The other one's between your legs. Ha ha. I wish I'd been born a man. I would rather be out there. And she's getting drunker and drunker. And oh, by the way, Sansa, keep drinking. You have to drink with me or else I feel like a lush.
drink.
It was interesting, too. I think, like you suggested earlier, Chooch, the show really was sort of setting us up to wonder if Cersei was trying to poison Sansa.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she's certainly poisoning her mind.
Yeah. And I think in this context, it was so she obviously, since that's not what she intended the Nightshade for, I think really what it was is more, again, like you seem uncorrupted somehow, and that pisses me off because my own corruption gives me, nightmares. And mm-hmm. so I have to somehow prove that you're not better than me. And I'm going to make you drink too, because if you're not drinking and I'm drinking, then I'm the old lush of a queen and you're just the perfect little virginal princess, you know? It's like...
Yeah. Well, I did like how through these, I don't know if you can call them conversations, through these little monologues, she it really does show her frustration with her lot in life, you know? Mm-hmm. I think she does wish that she could be out there, that she could actually rule the mm-hmm. kingdom, rule the realm, but she's relegated to queen, and there's a lot of good insight there.
I have written down Cersei wanted to be a boy mm-hmm. because, she and Jaime looked exactly the same. Why did he learn to fight and she learned to curtsy?
Yeah. She's another one of, several characters in the series that, struggles against the rigid gender roles that are enforced in this culture.
And I wonder how those conversations would have gone if Arya were in the room.
Oh, that would have been fun. I don't think Arya would have survived to get to the Red Keep with her mouth.
Yeah, I think that if Arya actually were still in King's Landing in the Red Keep, she would have gotten herself imprisoned a while back.
I think Arya would have ended up in the black cells just for her mouth. Love mm-hmm. the girl.
So it's interesting that we get a couple of visits from Lancel.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, because he takes his arrow wound and decides that he's now best able to serve the battle by providing inaccurate information to the queen. That said, I think we get a little bit more of a positive side from Lancel, at least in the context of. He does seem actually interested in trying to help everyone win the battle. And so like when Cersei tells him to go bring Joffrey out of the battle, he's like, wait, what?
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a really bad idea to me. Don't you understand what's going to happen? And so he does it. But then even later when he sees the tide turning, he goes back to her and saying, no, listen, we need to get him back out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I thought through this whole episode that, he really stepped up, and when the Hound says you're going to, he didn't run away. He got mm-hmm. in there and took a shot.
Yeah.
And I didn't really see it as like being scared or retreating. It's mm-hmm. like, all right, I got to get this arrow taken care of. And, but now I got to go report to Cersei. And then when he's saying, I need to go, I want to bring him back. And he really kind of grows a pair, and unfortunately, he had been wounded.
And she's able to she just hits him, poke at him, and it's like, "Ow!"
And
that was great.
Though it was kind of a, I think, kind of a continuity error that he had gotten hit on the arrow hit the right side of his chest, and she hit him on the left side.
Just the jostling. I don't think it was
just him being a pure pussy getting hit. I think it was
intended to be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think probably the arrow wound might have hurt enough that even just getting shoved yeah. on the other side of your chest would still hurt.
I never have been hit in the chest with an arrow, so I really can't say.
That said, you know, despite Lancel stepping up a little bit, as we talked about, and maybe part of it is him trying to sell the idea of bringing Joffrey back out to Cersei, saying, you know, we're losing without him. But the fact that he says the battle is lost causes some things to happen that might not have happened otherwise.
Mm. Poor Tommen almost died, man. Yeah. Be careful.
Right. And so I think we can maybe just go ahead and follow these characters out through the end and then come back to talk more about the battle that's going on outside again. But so obviously he comes in, he says the battle is lost. And so that's when Cersei basically is saying, okay, I'm going to take Tommen, you know, and goes to the Iron Throne and tells him like the worst bedtime story ever.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, Mommy, stags you're crazy.
Aren't evil, they just eat grass.
Yeah. And it was good seeing Sansa step up too, that, you know, all of these years of training, she's like, all right, let's sing. Let's, you know, pray and
yeah, and you guys keep singing up while I run away.
Well, then, yeah.
I know, but yeah. So now here's a question, though. Shay encourages her to go barricade herself in her room, but doesn't come with her saying she needs to say goodbye to someone. Yeah. Who is she talking about? What is that?
I figured she wanted to see Tyrion.
Yeah, I assume Tyrion.
I guess so, and I mean, that makes sense, but it's just not at all clear where she goes after that.
And not very realistic that she's gonna go to the battlements. What the hell are you doing here?
It was a nice little moment where she's saying no one's gonna rape me and shows that she's got a dagger on her leg.
Yeah.
Ready to cut some faces off.
That's right.
But I did think it was just weird, that whole, like, oh, I need to say goodbye to someone, and then we just don't see her again in the episode.
Yeah.
So, like,
She's sneaky like that. One thing I wanted to say before we move on, it's something that Tech brought up. Cersei knows she's playing the Game of Thrones, and she kind of sucks at it. Whereas Sansa doesn't know she's playing, and is really good at it. And that's demonstrated where she settles everyone down, she calms them down and acts like a real queen does. Also, she's a survivor. She's still alive. She's not in a black cell. She's survived and she will survive. As Tyrion said in a previous episode, you may outlive us all. And, you know, I mean, Cersei wants to be really good at it. Mm-hmm. She sucks. I'm sorry.
I don't disagree there, but I do disagree that Sansa is playing, because it's like you said, she doesn't know she's playing.
Yeah, she doesn't know what she's doing.
Being the person she was brought up to be, and but she's really, at the same time, she's very passive. She is reacting to the situations as they come across, but she's not proactive. She's not planning anything. Certainly not in the show at this point.
Right.
And in fact, actually, that just brings us to, she goes off to her room with the specific belief the Lannisters are going to lose.
Yep.
Stannis is going to come. And they're saying, basically, if you can keep from being raped by one of Stannis' soldiers before he gets in, then he won't hurt you. In fact, he might just ransom you to Rob as part of trying to solve that issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he won't hurt you. And so that's why when she goes up there and finds the Hound in her room, he offers to take her home, but she's now feeling like, I don't need to do that because Stannis is going to win and he won't hurt me.
Yeah.
So, but that said, I want to ask Chooch again, because this seems like I've seen several people discuss this both ways. Does Sansa go with the Hound at the end of that scene or not?
I don't think so. It's, I think she should. But
Well, in hindsight, I certainly.
Don't know that she would.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I guess what I was surprised by is just that I read a lot of people saying they thought she did leave with him. Mm-hmm. That it was intended to imply that she did, is that he walked out and she was going to follow him.
Mm.
I do think they're setting it up that way to make people think she did.
Mm.
But I just love this whole scene. Mm-hmm. And my favorite part is when she realizes that, no, he won't hurt her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, what I love, actually, I think that there's some really nice and subtle acting from Sansa in that scene, especially that moment, because I feel like when she first says, "You won't hurt me," she's feeling like, "I'm standing up to you. I know you won't hurt me. You won't hurt me."
Yeah.
But then his reaction shows her, it's like, he really wasn't threatening me. Mm-hmm. He yeah. really did want to help me. And now I've basically just proved to him that I didn't trust him.
Yep. Mm.
And now I've just hurt him, basically.
Hmm.
And so now he's going to leave. And you can see it in her face. If you watch that again, you can see when she says, "You won't hurt me," she's like, "I'm standing up to you." But then he says, "No, I won't hurt you." And he turns to leave, and you see her face, and you can see her realizing,
mm-hmm.
"Oh, he really did want to help me."
Yeah.
And now I've kind of spurned him.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I agree. I think like everything about the Hound comes to fruition for her right in that scene, because up until then she was just scared of him.
Yeah.
Even though he saved her, she was still scared of him. And for the first time, she can look him in the face.
Mm-hmm.
She can talk back to him. Yeah. And then she finally believes, wait, he does want to help me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just awesome.
Well, and one of the things that's just great is that obviously for those of us who have read the books, we know how awesome and interesting yeah. and complex the Hound is, which you wouldn't necessarily have had as good a sense of up to now in the show.
Yes.
But the show sort of has now revealed these hidden layers of him. And I'm glad to see it. And so it is interesting, just, you know, he is kind of a tragic figure in this sense, not just because of the burns, but, you know, just in the sense of, you know, he loves killing, but he also kind of hates himself for loving killing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I think there's so much of that, you know, he doth protest too much when he's talking about everybody's a killer, you know, the world's built by killers. He kind of believes it, but you kind of also get the feeling like he maybe wishes that weren't true. And he's trying to like tell himself to not be sentimental at the same time that he's telling her, because he's afraid of his own vulnerability.
Mm.
And so I think he does want to help her, but he also recognizes how being this badass killer that he kind of built himself up to be all the time has made her so afraid of him that she doesn't trust him. So he can't help her because she's afraid of him.
Yeah. And I think in a way it was kind of like his last salvation, because he was obviously always into her, and mm-hmm. it's kind of like his world's lost and he's, you know, dropped out. What do I do now? And it kind of seemed like she, in a way, was like his salvation. Like, I don't even know if consciously, you know, it's like he had this feeling that he could maybe build a life with her, you know, not being a killer. Yeah.
Or if nothing else, like the like with Brienne, when Renly died, she swore her service to Catelyn. And so
yeah.
he has decided to not be Joffrey's protector anymore.
Right.
And so he, being a protector like that, is kind of all he knows. And so he was sort of thinking maybe she could be a better person. That would be a good thing that he could do.
Yeah.
She would be worthy of his protection.
That would give him purpose. And
yeah, but then she rejects him.
Yeah. And in the books, he asks her for a kiss.
I thought he asked her for a song in the books.
He asks her for a song, but he also asks her for a kiss, which he doesn't get. But she later believes it to be different.
Okay. That's not how I remember it, but you might be right.
Yeah. I pay a lot of attention to Sansa Sandor ever since the Sansan was brought up to me. So I'm like, oh, wait, look, it's there too. It's there too. And out of context, it should be really creepy. But in context, it's not. It's weird. And I would go into more, but I can't without spoilers. Because things that were in book two are not in the series, and I'm not going to go into that.
Okay.
Cool.
The scene with them is left ambiguous.
Yes.
He has offered to take her to Winterfell. She initially rejects him, but the scene ends ambiguously, not confirming one way or the other whether she follows him or not.
Mm-hmm.
We talked a little bit about Cersei and Tommen already, but of course there's that last second she's about to give him the poison, and that's when Tywin and Loras show up.
Can we talk about Tyrion and his speech?
I was just gonna say that.
I'm sorry.
I don't mean to snap. I mean literally the second half of the sentence was gonna be, which gives us the opportunity to rewind and talk about the battle.
The problem is, Christiane, you and I think too much alike sometimes. Yes. And I don't trust that you're thinking like I am. I need to trust.
So anyway, let's zip back. We kind of covered everything with Tyrion up through the wildfire. But so Stannis obviously has a lot more soldiers. Now they're landing. Now they're coming up to the gates. You know, they've got the archers and the rocks, but that's not quite enough to get the job done. So he sends the Hound out. The Hound brings Lancel with him. Hound makes a couple of vulgar threats on his way out.
I love that. That's one, though.
Blaming fucking arrows come anywhere near me.
Yes.
Any man dies with a clean sword, I'll rape his fucking corpse.
Yes. There's some great just battle action sequences in there, and some impressive gore too.
Yeah. Viv had a note of Stannis being inches from death as a rock comes down and mm-hmm. smashes the guy next to him.
Yeah.
Oh, the Herdo is hilarious and gross.
Yeah. And then later he gets to cut the top of a guy's head off.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of sword was that?
Yeah, it's Valyrian steel, probably.
Must have been.
Although I don't know if it's established in the story that Stannis has a Valyrian steel sword or not.
Well, all the important warriors seem to, so.
Yeah, I mean, they're not quite that common either, though. I mean, see, what's a little complex in the book is that they, you know, if you recall at the beginning of the season, he did this whole ceremony where he's supposed to make this flaming Lightbringer sword,
mm-hmm.
right? Supposedly, he actually still has a sword that is supposed to be Lightbringer, and that's what he uses, but they've kind of not made a point of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, though, in the context of this books, whether he's supposed to have a Valyrian steel sword or not. Because, I mean, we see them fairly often in the story because we're following important people, but it's important to note that they're really not that common.
Yeah, that makes sense. At his charge, and they come up against the walls, and they're throwing the rocks, and they're raining arrows or whatever, and all I had going through my mind of every other castle siege you ever see is, okay, they have wildfire, they don't have boiling oil.
Mm.
It's never occurred to somebody that could be quite effective defense.
I thought the same thing.
Mm. Well, but you need to have that set up. Maybe they don't have oil.
Well, they had a while to prepare. or maybe not blow your whole wildfire load in one shot, though they didn't know how effective it would be.
Well, that, and remember too that, you know, Tyrion's whole concern, as Bronn expressed earlier in the season, is that unless you really have people who really know what they're doing,
yeah,
and even if you do, in the thick of battle, all it takes is someone to drop one before it gets thrown over the wall.
Yeah.
And now you've set the entire inside of your castle on fire.
Yeah.
So that's why that's true. Why he came up with the other idea for it. So it's definitely dangerous. But yeah, that's certainly one of the possible siege weapons that they did not make use of. So we have our initial skirmish out there where Lancel takes the arrow, and we get a moment where, you know, the Hound starts to get freaked out by all the fire. And, you know, I thought they showed that really well, both in the performance of the actor and just in the way they cut it together to really make it clear what it was that was freaking him out. Mm-hmm. And we get just a nice moment of Bronn saving his life and kind of doing a snarky little ha ha.
Yeah.
You know,
and then go on total Gensu warrior.
Yeah. But at that point, you know, the Hound is not really paying attention to Bronn. He's freaked out and frozen and kind of just sort of wanders back inside, and everyone else kind of sees him going back inside and going, wait, oh, are we retreating? What? Okay. All right. Everyone back inside. And so they go back in, and
yeah,
and Joffrey are like, dude, what the fuck?
You're on the wrong side of the wall. At first I didn't buy it. You know, this battle hardened, clear. I'm sure he's fought at night. He's sure he's had seizures. I know he was traumatized as a child, you know, by fire. Having a panic attack didn't seem realistic to me. But then I realized, though, with all of his talk of he's a killer, I'm a killer, that, you know, he was just having this moral crisis or existential crisis, and that was just, that was the breaking limit. So, you know, at first I was like, bah, but then it really made sense to me.
It was scary enough for him to have that sort of first moment of, you know what? I don't actually have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was sort of just a visceral fear, but instead of pushing through it, he just kind of realized, okay, you know what? I'm done with this. I don't want to do this anymore.
I'm out.
Yeah. And so we get that great, you know, speech, you know, first of all, it's funny when Tyrion is saying, oh, can I get you some ice milk too? And perhaps a bowl of raspberries.
That was great.
But then, you know, he just has the, you know,
your King's Guard, Clegane. We must beat them back or they're going to take this city. Your King's city.
Fuck the King's Guard. Fuck the city. Fuck the King.
And for a split second, the look on Joffrey's face made me feel bad for him. Only for a moment. Bad. Only for a moment. But just the thing is, it's kind of, Joffrey is such just like a monster most of the time, but just that tiny moment of him literally feeling like this person I've trusted, who's been like my right-hand man for my entire life, who I thought was my most loyal, you know, servant out of everybody in the world, just said, fuck you, in the middle of a battle. Mm-hmm. And he's leaving. And so not that I, in a larger sense, feel bad for him because he's a monster and I hope he dies. But the point is, for a moment, you could see how much that affected him. And there was just, like I said, just a split second of feeling bad for him.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that moment and I took so much delight in it. My Schadenfreude kicked in and I was like, that's what you get, Joffrey. Yeah. So we both reacted to the same thing. And that is why Jack Gleason is such a fantastic actor, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he sold that with a look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that he's reeling from that, and then Lancel comes up, and you can see how pissed he is at having to convey this message, but he says it anyways, like, so Joffrey, your mom wants you to go inside.
Yeah.
And he's kind of almost even phrasing it in a, like, you're not really going to do it.
Right.
And then Tyrion is just like, if you're not going to defend the castle, then why should they?
Right.
You know, and
Joffrey proving himself, you know, a little bitch all over again. Does she have important business for me?
Right. Well, and you can see the conflict on his face, but only in the context of he doesn't want anyone to think he's a coward if he leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not a matter of like, oh, I really should lead everybody for the purpose of winning the battle. It's more like, I don't want people to think I'm running away, even though I obviously really am. But he does.
Yeah.
And so that leaves Tyrion suddenly just realizing, and, you know, Peter Dinklage is, as always, just brilliant.
Yeah.
With first his just sort of belated, slow realization of what he's going to have to do, and that he is willing to do it, you know, because he's been saying for so long that all of this was about, you know, everything he was doing for the benefit of King's Landing and King Joffrey was all just really, really to save his own neck.
Mm-hmm.
But now we see he is about to go lead a battle outside.
Oh, and like it's almost like he's thinking out loud.
Yeah.
I'll lead. Like, I'll lead. Like, did I say that?
Yeah. I'll I guess lead. I have to do it now. Yeah.
Well, and Pod runs up to him with his helm and axe before he even says, I'll lead, which I thought was very interesting because Pod's like, oh, here we go. Now it's my master's time. And to me, I thought it was kind of in reaction to that. And he's like, I'll lead. Just like Chooch said, thinking out loud, I'll lead. And I was like, whoa, wait, I just said that. Here's my armor. Here's my axe. Fuck.
Yeah.
And then he steps up to it, which is great. And we get our Braveheart speech.
Yeah. And how powerful that was leading everybody. They call me the half man. What does that make you?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, and also, you know, I mean, we got just a little bit of a hint of it just before he did that. But, you know, if you listen, you know, in some of the scenes of Tyrion there, you can hear all of the people in the background starting to like, the king's gone. What do we do? What do we do? And they're panicking. And so he knew, like, without someone to say, no, we're still doing this, it was going to all fall apart.
Yep.
And he has the plan, you know, that was set up with the tunnels. And without spoiling anything, it also sets up the tunnels for something that happens much later. But I'm not going to say anything else about that. Except that the tunnels do come into play again at some point.
Cool.
Many times, actually. Because we've seen the tunnels earlier. With Arya
ended up accidentally coming out of one in season one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But so anyway, he there are brave men knocking at our door. Let's go kill them.
Don't fight for honor. Don't fight for glory. Don't fight for riches because he won't get any. This is your city Stannis means to sack. That's your gate he's ramming. If he gets in, it will be your houses he burns. Your gold he steals. Your women he will rape. Those are brave men knocking at our door. Let's go kill them!
And which, right after that, I shouted at my TV, half man!
Yay!
I
and so, everyone else does too. Because he gets them to come around behind the guys who are actually trying to knock down the gate, and they win! Hooray! Oh, wait, there's actually a lot more guys just over there.
Yeah.
and it Darn. Starts with him cutting them off at the knees.
Yeah.
Which I just love.
So then we get, you know, battle, 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 lots of stuff, fighting, fighting. But then, oh, hey, Sir Mandon, what's up?
Yep.
So what did you think about that, Chooch?
So I could tell by the helm and everything that it was Kingsguard, but I didn't know who it was.
Sir Mandon is.
And I was wondering if it was significant.
Yeah. Well, it's not really like a character that we've seen a lot from before, but yes, it was one of the Kingsguard. It was the one that went out there with him, obviously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That apparently took a moment of opportunity.
Yep.
And why would he do that?
I wonder.
If somebody put him up to it.
Yeah.
But then Pod gets him in the eye.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good old Pod.
That was nice.
Right. But it's not at all clear how severe Tyrion's wounds are. He does not seem okay. He has a bad facial laceration at the very least.
Yeah, it didn't look that bad, but I knew it was, clearly bad, and it knocks him out. So
yeah, I think there was a little bit of TV cheating as far as the nature of the wound, just because they sort of want to imply that they seem to sort of imply that it's the cut and it's a head wound of some kind, like maybe a concussion at least, but it's also just not clear exactly what sort of sword stroke would have produced that.
In the book, I had to flip ahead because in the book, it's a lot more perilous.
Yeah, I had heard that he loses part of his nose.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think they're not going to have him lose his nose.
He's too pretty.
Well, not even that. They'd have to use CGI to take it out all the time. Every time he's on screen. That would suck.
True.
Yeah.
I think just a regular face scar is plenty.
Ooh, a nice soap opera scar.
Yeah, so at the same time, I think, I don't know, do we need to be careful here of spoilers? Even Chooch, as you said, you heard he loses part of his nose. I mean, I think someone who really doesn't know anything might not even be sure he's still alive. Do we have to be careful there?
Or? I mean, it definitely seemed to, as they cut back and forth to him, it seemed to look worse and worse. It seemed to open up a little and it was bleeding. And he was bleeding at the top of his head and he passes out. As just like a concussion, not that it was fatal.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how careful we have to be.
Well, I don't know. I think we've as much as confirmed now that he's not dead.
I don't think he is, but also, I mean, any significant cut and wound like that can be a fatal wound. And, with the medicine.
It is no question a very severe wound. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is not okay.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. Okay. But so there's a whole lot of stuff happening in this last sequence that really rewards multiple viewings. But even also it kind of reward, there's some stuff that I think you would probably just not pick up on at all unless you had read the books. And one of those in particular is that when, Tyrion is losing it, but we suddenly see a mounted charge of a new people and, hey, look, they're actually attacking Stannis' guys. What? Who is that? But along with that, we also see someone that it's a subtle detail. So if you miss it, you're just thinking, oh, it's a guy on a white horse and he's one of the guys fighting. But the subtle detail there is that is Renly's armor.
Yeah, I saw the little horns on the helm.
Oh, good. You did catch that.
Yeah.
I was afraid it was far too subtle.
And then I thought Renly's army joined Stannis' forces, and then I'm wondering, well, wait, is this one of Littlefinger's deals at work?
So, as is revealed at the end, this is, in fact, Tywin's forces joined up with the Tyrells, Sir Loras.
Yes.
Desperate Loras for Downing revenge against Stannis.
And dressed up in his boyfriend's armor.
Yeah. Decided to join forces with the Lannisters.
Yes.
And when he first charged into the throne room, I did think it was Lancel, not Loras. But then I realized, oh, no, that's Loras. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
And again, we cheer for Tywin coming to the rescue. What's up?
I know. It's twice in one season, right? Well, and so I think, again, the show, I think, did a really splendid job of, even though the Lannisters are sort of more or less the bad guys still, maybe except for Tyrion, we like Tyrion, but but still sort of making it like we're happy that they win ultimately. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like that last moment, that very last moment where we find out, oh, what's actually going on here? Well, Cersei was just about to poison Tommen. I don't think anyone wanted that to happen.
Yeah.
Right? And so, and so it leaves us at that very last moment before the reveal, worried that this poor little nice kid that we like is about to get poisoned to death by his mom. And so that makes us happy again, as you said, to see Tywin, which is again, something like we're surprised to be put in a position to feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, and I want to jump in one of Viv's notes when we were in the Red Keep, and all the different scenes when you see Tommen in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a note, Tommen's sweet face sleeping in the background in different frames is nearly too much to view. The innocence,
he's a very cute little kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The innocence and the fear in that room is as overpowering as the screams of the burning men.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the mother coming out.
And so with Tywin storming in, the battle is over. We won.
We have won.
And we have credits with the Reigns of Castamere once again.
And that's when I got all teary, by the way. Mm-hmm. Is that swelling, we won. And I was like, yay. And even though I was conflicted, I was still like all girly and teary. And
it was something that the whole season was leading up to, obviously, this whole big battle. It's one of the most anticipated episodes, and I felt that it delivered in spades, and it was wonderful. Yeah. And it's like how glad I am, again, that this series has become a TV show and that the TV show is doing well and that they're making it awesome and that it's still going on.
I agree. And who says George R. R. Martin can't write action? Look at that. Right there. That is action.
Do people say that?
Yes, they do, actually, because so many of the battles – you don't see. They talk about them later.
Mm-hmm.
People say that.
He writes action fine. He's good at writing action. I agree. It's just not always his priority.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, there you go. So, any last thoughts before we go to ratings?
No.
No?
Oh, one last throwaway thing just popped into my head. I like when Cersei sized up Shay. And knew exactly where she was from.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad we didn't talk, or I'm glad you mentioned that because we didn't talk about it. Yeah. That was very cool that she, you know, Cersei is apparently better at reading accents than Tyrion is.
Yes.
And it was interesting, this idea that she, as soon as she sees Shay, just instantly says, something's going on with you. Something's not right here.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Shay is not that good an actress, as we have observed before. She's just never been in a position where anyone else was paying attention.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so, but just like for Cersei going, a lowborn girl from Loranth has made it to the Red Keep in 10 years and doesn't know how to curtsy.
Yep.
Come on. It's like, really?
But I want to know what that story was.
Yeah.
Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. I will give it. I'm trying to. I guess I'm going to pick the obvious one, but it's 10 out of 10 exploded ships.
Nice. I also gave it 10 out of 10 axes to the face.
Very nice. Mine's similar, both in score and description. 10 out of 10 brawn nose breaks.
Very nice. So we all rated 10 out of 10. That's great.
Yeah.
I don't feel sorry for my nose. It'll be up your ass soon.
All right. So thank you, everybody, for listening. Hopefully
we don't have the contests. I had a count. I had counted 4 losses of limb and 0 battle cries, which Viv disagrees with me a little bit on that score.
Yeah, there were screaming half man. No, there was some.
They weren't going. That was afterwards when he first led the. When he first said, let's go kill him. They were yay, and they went out the door. When they won the battle, they started chanting "Half Man," but that's not a battle cry.
I see.
Yeah, I would agree. That's it's not a battle cry when it's celebratory afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll have to touch on that when we record for episode 10. I'm not going to be able to pronounce this. Valar Morghulis.
I think that's right.
Is that right? Okay, good.
Yeah, sounds right.
Which is the finale.
Season finale. The denouement.
What are we going to do when season 2 is over? We'll have to wait a whole another year or something.
Well, I know we have to record a feedback episode. Yeah.
And I don't know. Well, maybe we could do occasional episodes every now and then. Maybe not with a full cast, but with one or two of us just focusing on different characters and so forth.
I have a last minute news wire coming in.
Uh-oh.
Viv gives me her vote.
Oh, okay.
Her rating. 9 out of 9 sparkly unicorns with rainbows and cupcakes shooting out of their eyes to offset all the icky.
Wow. That's pretty sparkly.
Still a perfect score.
No, it's 9 out of 10.
No, she said 9 out of 9.
Oh, 9 out of 9. Sorry.
Nine's her favorite number.
Got it.
So, and with episode 10, we'll have to find out what PG's rating was.
Yes. But thank you for joining us, everyone.
Sorry.
All right. Is there anything else we should, I don't know, do we need to say? I don't know what the end spiel is.
To drop it.
Like us on Facebook. Again. Rate us on iTunes and send the feedback, because we are going to do a feedback episode, we promise.
Yes. Just maybe when the show's over.
I declare the show done.
Yay!
We have won.
If you'd like to send feedback to Beyond the Wall, you can email us at btw@specficmedia.com. That's btw@specficmedia.com. Or you could send us a voicemail at 704-315-5884. Or you can comment on the web. Go to specficmedia.com, and there you'll find a shiny little button to click on that'll take you right to our page. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 Unported License. Feel free to share and remix. Just give us credit and don't charge money for it.